you. Good morning. Welcome to Election Day 2008, the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors November 4th meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
You have several changes to today's agenda items under Consent Agenda Item A2, Introduction of the Proposed Ordinance Amending the County Fee Schedule for Fiscal Year 2009-10 and Calendar Year 2009 for Parks, Golf Course, and Airport Parking Only Fees. Recommendation is for approval and instruct clerk to give notice of hearing date set for November 25th, 2009 a.m. Due to the size of the agenda packet, several pages inadvertently were skipped when numbered. Those pages are now attached for your approval. Under withdrawn items, item B2, presentation of the employee 25-year service awards has been withdrawn. Staff has requested that this be moved to November 25th agenda. Added items on the consent agenda, item A20, submittal of a resolution commending medical response platoon member Ron Roberson for 6 years of dedicated service to the citizens of the Carrizo Plains. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Item A21 is also added. This is submittal of a resolution commending medical response platoon member Fred Rayner for 7 years of dedicated service to the citizens of Carrizo Plains. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Under amended hearing items, item C7, hearing to consider the appeal by Santa Margarita Ranch. The staff is recommending that this item be amended by adding a comprehensive response to the appeal and adding table I, or 1. The additional pages are attached for your approval. Items C4 and C5 on today's agenda will be reversed on the agenda, meaning that you will hear C5 first and then item C4. You also have an added item to the consent closed session. You're adding on number 27, which is San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District versus Russell et al. That's your changes for today.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. With that, we'll move along to the first item on this morning's agenda, which is the consent calendar, and I will open it to the public for public comment on items on consent. And I do have one request to speak. On item A8, Ed Eby.
Good morning. I'm Ed Eby from Nipomo. I'm requesting that you pull item A8 from the consent agenda and give it a hearing that it deserves. It's insinuated in the staff report that this recommendation for so-called conservation pricing has the support of an undefined water purveyor group on the Nipomo Mesa. The members of this group are not identified, their constituency and authority is questionable, their minutes or findings have not been provided to you, they have provided no report or recommendation to you in their report, so their mention is a misleading distraction rather than an argument to support the letter. Golden State's request to the PUC is advertised as a conservation rate, yet no supporting evidence is presented in your proposed letter that conservation will be achieved. Golden State's testimony to the PUC admits that the conservation to be achieved is speculative, has no supporting data, and is based on feelings and assumptions. Their only firm conclusion is that they will not lose money if the reduced water is acceptable or successful, but they will make a lot more money if the water conservation is not achieved, so they win in either case. Unfortunately, you were given a letter at the last meeting that promised to show the rate structure. This rate structure would reduce demand. The letter did not show that. It made reference to a New Mexico document that I have been unable to find. New Mexico has neither the economy, the weather, or the water use that we have in our area, so it's not comparable. This three-tier rate structure has been rejected 2 and possibly 3 times by the NCSD over the last 4 years. I will provide you with the arguments leading to these decisions if you pull this item for discussion. I urge you to pull this item for discussion so that you can make your decision based on facts and evidence presented rather than intuition and insinuations. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Eby, quick question. Are you a customer of the Golden State Water Company?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Nguyen.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, supervisors. My name is Mike Nguyen, and I'm from Napomo also. I would like to encourage you strongly to adopt A1. The septic treatment regs, these have been gone over in great detail, both by us, by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and by your staff. If there are some slight imperfections that may need to work out over time, that's fine, but this is definitely a step in the right direction. A3, I do encourage you to approve that, except it still seems to me, and this is on a personal level, seems to me that it's a double dip when it comes to taking allocations in lieu fees, both from businesses and housing. That it seems that a person is going to pay at work and then pay at home both. So I'm not sure that it should be for the business, but only for the housing. But primarily, I do want to talk to you about A8. Again, our board has not taken a formal position on this yet. It is agendized for our discussion in the next meeting. But I would encourage you to approve it. What is not being said as clearly as perhaps we should have in our correspondence with you, and particularly under the leadership of Supervisor Shadyan, who has held a number of meetings in the Napomo area with all of us purveyors and the larger mutual water company. The PUC themselves have issued directives that future rates need to be conservation tiered, and they're looking at a 3-tier minimum statewide. So all that they're doing in this process essentially is falling in with the PUC directive. Now, I think it's good for conservation. I'm hoping that our own district will take the same step. I believe we need to. But it's always a question of who takes the first step and who follows. In this case, maybe we're one step behind. The Woodlands already has a 3-tier system, and rural is holding off until Golden State finishes going through the PUC. But this is the right step in the right direction. It has broad-scale support. It'll have some naysayers. I understand that. But we hope that you will approve it and put your full weight behind the request to the PUC. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Okay, that was my last request to speak on items on the consent calendar. So I'll close public comment, bring it back to the board, and ask my colleagues if they would like to speak to any of the items separately. Mr. Ovid.
Correction, A, Tim.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gibson?
Nothing for me, sir.
Okay. Supervisor Sajjan?
Very quickly, just for discussion purposes only, A3 and A8.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor. Okay, and I'll... wait to hear what Supervisor Sajjan has on A3 and A8, and I may comment on those as well. With that, I'll go back to Supervisor Sajjan for A3 and A8. Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if we have staff folks that I can ask questions. I know Mr. Crusoe is here for A8 and Sir Lilly.
A3 is A3. Mr. Lilly from... planning, and that's basically just setting the hearing for December 9th, is it not?
That's correct. That way, if your board so chooses on December 9th to adopt an inclusionary housing ordinance and the ordinance creating a fund to collect and administer affordable housing in lieu fees, you can do so, and you won't have 2 affordable housing in lieu fees on the books.
And Mr. Liddy, my only comment is, would NCSD get a copy of staff's report and recommendation? Maybe there will be more clarification before our next hearing day.
Sure.
Because Mr. Nguyen raises those concerns, and I want to be sure that we're addressed prior to the meeting date, and if there are any further concerns, then I can work with the community and see what are the how we can best address them.
That's all I want to know on this item. Thank you.
And Mr. Crusoe, I did check with our council to see if we are in any kind of a violation as far as identifying who's who, minutes, this and that. And it did not raise any red flag for us. I'm just looking for a comfort zone. I am supportive of this, and the reason, and thank you for attending all of our meetings. And I didn't know if my colleagues had any concerns. I took pull it out for discussion to give them the comfort zone they need to be in order to support this. Do you have anything to add? Because our goal is, as we have discussed here during Title 19, time when we were trying to put something in place, and with the help of the water purveyors and two members of NCSD, and the meetings are held at the NCSD building, our goal is to have three-tier, which brings us to a point where conservation becomes real issue. If you go beyond second tier, then it's going to hit your pocket hard, where you're going to think twice about maybe wasting water or otherwise. Do you have anything to add to that? Because Mr. Eby raises concerns, and I want to be sure that we all somehow address his concerns and bring the nature of discussion that we're having in the South County, more so in the FOMA, to my colleagues' attention here.
Thank you, Supervisor Saji. Mr. Chairman, good morning. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. Staff has attended several meetings in NPOMO hosted by the district to talk about water issues in South County on the NPOMO Mesa Water Conservation Area. If your board recalls the Papadopoulos study from 2004, which was updated in 2007, the primary recommendation from the Papadopoulos water study was to institute conservation rate structures throughout the Mesa. So we have to applaud the Woodlands, which already has that type of rate structure, and we believe it's a real breakthrough for the private firm, the Golden State Water Company, to actually propose a conservation rate structure to the California Public Utilities Commission. We'd like to see the other major water purveyors do the same thing, and in fact, when you see the water chapter of the conservation and open space element, county policy will be calling for conservation rate structures for all purveyors in the county. So we believe Golden State is in the lead, and they should be commended for it.
Thank you, Mr. Crusoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Sajjan. And I'm supportive of both of the issues, A3 and A8, and appreciate Supervisor Sajjan raising the issue. Having been in the water conservation business for a number of years, conservation rate structures, which is a tiered rate structure, is one of the most effective means of water conservation, and I'm happy to see that the private water purveyors are taking that on, even though some of the other water purveyors in the county do not embrace that as of yet. But the California Urban Water Conservation Council does recommend a tiered rate structure as one of their primary best management practices for water conservation. So I am supportive of the letter, and those agencies that are regulated by the CPUC, they do need to go to the Public Utilities Commission for rate structure approval, and hopefully they'll be granted that approval when it goes to the CPUC. Supervisor Gibson, did you have a comment?
Just very, very quickly, is Golden State pursuing similar tiering for their operation in Los Osos?
I was going to ask the representative at the last meeting, did not remember to do that. I will find out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. One more. Item A10, Supervisor Ovid.
Yeah, it's just a minor thing, and it's not much, except that they described the location on page A10-2. There's a site located on Main Street, approximately 3/4 miles east of Highway 1. That could be either Main Street in Morro Bay, or it could be Main Street in Cambria, so it should be Highway 101.
Okay, very good, and we'll make that correction.
Yeah,
thank you, Supervisor Ovid. So we need a motion?
I move approval of the consent agenda items, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
As amended.
Moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as amended. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Shahjian?
Aye.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Okay. With that, we'll move on to public comment. The morning's opportunity for the public to speak on items that are not on the agenda. And I do have a few requests to speak during public comment. The first being our esteemed county clerk, Julie Rodewald. Julie?
Good morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Well, today is the day that every person in this nation has been waiting for if not the last few weeks, at least the last year and a half. It is election day, and first of all, I'd like to remind everybody that comes into the board meeting today that this is a polling place. We are issuing ballots out of our office, so we ask that people refrain from wearing campaign slogans. If they have buttons or pins or t-shirts on, to please cover them or remove them while they're within 100 feet of our building, and also refrain from any political discussions for any measure or candidate that's on the ballot today while they're in the board meeting. We're asking everybody throughout the county to respect the nonpartisan nature of our polling places on this very, very busy day. So just to give you an update, we've heard from many of our polls. There are long lines. There were long lines at, when the polls opened at 7. They've moved voters through very efficiently. I've talked to a few voters that were in and out within about 15, 20 minutes. So things are going well. Of course, we've had our spate of problems at the polls with machines, but everything is up and running correctly. One of the things that we have heard from the polls is that the pens that we use bleed through on the ballot. But we want to assure the voters that there's no opportunity. It doesn't bleed through into a voting oval on the other side, so it will not affect the way that any ballots are counted. So that's not an issue for people. If voters in our county have vote-by-mail ballots still, they need to make sure they get dropped off either at a polling place today in our county or to our office. We do have our drive-by drop-off out in front of the office, so they don't have to find parking here and get out of their cars. Just to kind of give you an update, we have issued over 81,000 vote-by-mail ballots. We have about 60,000 of those back as of this morning, and a little over 55,000 counted for release tonight. So those will be released after the polls close at 8 o'clock tonight. We will have updated results on our website. We are expecting perhaps a late night. If we have long lines at the polls at 8 o'clock, it may be 9:30 before we start getting precinct results in, so we may have results that are not out. Hopefully they'll be out by 11 to 11:30, but they may be a little bit delayed, so we ask for everybody's patience. Get out and vote. I voted stickers on every lapel up on the dais, and I'm hoping that we see everybody in San Luis Obispo County sporting these wonderful stickers today. Thank you.
Did you notice that Supervisor Sajjan had several stickers?
Yeah. That doesn't mean he voted off.
I'm just trying to get attention.
Yeah, he just raided our supply.
Okay. Ms. Rodewald, you mentioned that people can drive by the front of the office and drop off their ballots. That's the Monterey Street side.
That's correct. That's on the Monterey Street side. So if they come up Monterey Street to go past the Fremont Theater, we're waiting. We've got poll workers waiting out there to get their ballots.
Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
I just wanted to add my thanks to the folks who are actually working the polls. I'm sort of old school guy who goes down to the Vets Hall at the base of the Cayucas Pier where we have a number of precincts, and it was fully staffed with enthusiastic folks really doing a wonderful job promoting this most important of our civic duties. So I just wanted to make sure that those folks are thanked for
their
efforts.
Thank you. Yeah, and I didn't mean to forget them, because they are the people that are on the ground. I mean, all the work that we've been doing for the last several months would be for naught if without our volunteers that are there to greet the voters this morning.
Do you want to? There is one thing going on. I don't know for those that go to the poll, but you have a cadre of youth that are working at these polls.
Right.
If you want to explain that.
Sure. We have. There's a law that allows us to have high school students that our seniors in good standing work the polls, and we have a large number of them working the polls. We tried to accommodate as many as we could. We had a lot of requests. Obviously, it's an historic election. Everybody wants to be involved. So we have many students out there, and what we hear back from both the students and the other poll workers and the voters is it's wonderful to see those young faces out there, to get them involved in the civic duty before they're even able to cast their ballots. Many of them are not eligible to vote in this election, but they're out there serving the voters throughout the day, and we really, really appreciate all of our poll workers and especially the students who have volunteered today.
Very good. Thank you. And Julie, you mentioned the returns may be coming in late, and that if people were lined up after 8 o'clock tonight when the polls usually close, they will be given an opportunity to vote. Is that correct?
Right. Anybody who's in line, either whether it's at our office or at any polling place in the county, will be allowed to vote. But they have to be standing in line, not running across the parking lot or driving their car up to the parking lot. They have to actually be in line. And our poll workers are instructed to station someone behind the last person in line at 8 o'clock so they know. I also got a note here to remind people that the last time to drop off ballots is at the close of polls also. So vote-by-mail ballots need to be in. If you're standing in line with a vote-by-mail ballot, you can turn that in, but you need to be in line or in our office here by 8 o'clock in order for your vote-by-mail ballot to be deposited correctly.
Very good. Thank you. And I know how busy your office is, but if there are people out there listening or watching the proceedings this morning, if they have questions, do you have a phone number that they can call?
Sure, they can call 781-5228. We've got extra staff that's on the phones this morning to direct people to their polling places, answer any questions, hear any complaints that they have.
Very good. Thank you. And Mr. Mankins, you...
That was it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Julie.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm
interested,
Mr. Edge.
Based on Julie's notation about this being a polling place, I'm looking forward to seeing you conduct a meeting of the Board of Supervisors that doesn't engage in political discussion for the day.
it's Rich, Mr. Edge, but I resist.
We can mute the mics if you like.
The comment's not over yet.
Okay, thank you. David Weissman, you're up, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is David Weissman, and I am here speaking on behalf of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. A week ago Wednesday, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, in cooperation with the NRC and the folks at Diablo Canyon, conducted an emergency drill simulation for an accident or an evacuation based on an incident at Diablo Canyon. They gave a debriefing to the public on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock in these chambers. Had I not run into Supervisor Patterson at a social event and found out about it, I wouldn't have known about it. As it was, with the exception of my colleague here this morning, Mr. Greening, we were the only two members of the public to attend this briefing or debriefing. This concerns me because FEMA said they're interested in transparency, but apparently they don't know how to notice an event in this community yet that involves the public. And at that debriefing, we were told a full report would be issued in 90 days on the results of this test. And I asked the County Emergency Services person, Ron Alsop, I said, well, will then the supervisors announce and will you formally hold a debriefing that the public actually knows about? And he said, no, not to his knowledge. So I would like to put in a request that when indeed this report is issued 90 days from now, that the supervisors do notice a regular public hearing and that FEMA be requested to come back and give the debriefing that was never held originally because it was so ill-attended and so ill-noticed. On a second issue related to this, the Environmental Protection Agency, in the waning days of the current administration, has announced new standards for protecting people. They're called protective action guides in the result of a radioactive release, whether accidental or the result of malice. These standards drastically weaken what have been the accepted standards for permissible levels of drinking water safety, soil contamination, and health exposure that would follow such an incident. And we would like to request the Alliance that the County supervisors who are charged with the protection of the citizens and residents of this county issue a letter to the Environmental Protection Agency of concern, questioning why they are changing the standards now and asking them or challenging them on the data and the background for which they are indeed reducing these standards. In fact, to give you just one example alone, in terms of the cleanup process, they would allow rates of certain radionuclides now that would allow the public to be exposed here in San Luis to 10 REMs per year, which would be the equivalent of 50,000 chest x-rays over a 30-year period. And these numbers are drastically changed from the existing numbers. I have here and will distribute a report on the scientific findings behind this, as well as a sample sign-on letter questioning the Environmental Protection Agency on these relaxed standards. And again, request that you require FEMA to come and give a real public debriefing when this emergency report is released 90 days from now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weissman. Eric Greening.
I am Eric Greening, and I am the other member of the public who was at the debriefing last Friday, and I am requesting the same things that Mr. Wiseman is requesting. And just to keep them straight, he's requesting two very specific things in different areas of action, as am I. One is to hold a public hearing on the contents of the written report when it comes out, with as many of the participants in the putting together of that report as possible, and have them there to answer questions from your board and from the public. The other is an issue of your legislative platform, and it's something that needs to be agendized sooner, far sooner. We're about 90 days away from the release of the written report on the exercise in this county. But the protective action guides are a nationwide change, a rule change, an administrative rule change, and they will take effect sooner rather than later. So I would suggest that you agendize this at your next meeting or your earliest possible opportunity in order to get a letter out. And I know we have some people in Washington, they haven't yet risen to the level of Don Peterson, but I know they've been successful in certain endeavors there, and maybe we can add this to their task in terms of feet on the ground, or we can get someone else's feet on the ground in Washington, because what we're talking about essentially is a lot more cases of cancer than anyone wants to think about. So those are the two issues that came out of that. There are some other issues that I will be following up on at the regional transit meeting. The assumption seemed to be made that bus drivers were public employees, which they are not. So I will be questioning at least the regional transit in San Luis Obispo City systems. They are not. Perhaps they have signed some kind of an agreement to be quasi-public employees in the event of emergency. Perhaps they haven't. We've got a lot of details, but I do appreciate the fact that the debriefing did take place in public. I understand that at least some members of your board were also present for another debriefing earlier that day. And I think when the real thing happens, if it happens, certainly finding every possible bug is in our interest. They did choose a rather rough scenario with a storm passing through and a major wind shift during the radioactive release. So certainly, they didn't go out of their way to make it easy, but I think it's very important to understand that every detail, including details of human behavior, worked. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Greening. If I may just briefly speak to Mr. Weissman and Mr. Greening's comment. The board does have a representative at the drill. As chair, I was at the drill all day Wednesday and participated. It was impressive to see everybody at work. They bring folks in from agencies all over the county, and there were members of the NRC there as well as FEMA grading the exercise, if you will. And the follow-up debriefing on Friday, they gave one earlier in the day, which I attended, for participants of the drill, and then the public debrief on Friday. And it was a very cursory debrief. The full report will be out within 90 days. It will be very comprehensive. And I think your recommendation to have a public introduction and discussion about the results of that is a good one, and we'll follow up and do just that. So thank you for your comments this morning. My last request to speak on public comment is Supervisor Linthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next Tuesday is Veterans Day, and since the Board of Supervisors will not be meeting next week, I'd like to take a moment to honor our veterans today. All veterans gave something. Some gave everything. Many have seen combat, and some were injured or killed. Most feel no more patriotic than others, and few feel any need to be appreciated on this special day. Some were career military or lifers. Some volunteered. Some were drafted. All left the comfort of their homes, the companionships of their friends and families, wives and children. Every veteran gave up the personal freedoms of civilian life while they served our country. If you talk to any of these vets, you'll learn that most believe they didn't do anything extraordinary. They were just simply doing their job while they're in service. Every man and woman who answers our country's call to duty should always be thanked and recognized for their service and commitment to our country. This week, I ask everyone to take a minute and get to personally know a veteran. There are many in San Luis Obispo County. Thank them for their service. You may never know the positive impact this will have on our veterans, and I assure you it will be greatly appreciated by those that have served. So please take a moment to honor our veterans next Tuesday. It's more than a holiday. It's more than a discount shopping day.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Linthal. That concludes our request to speak for items not on the agenda. So I'll close public comment, and we'll move on in our agenda to presentations. I do want to mention, as the clerk mentioned earlier, we did have a change in our presentation calendar. Item B2, which is recognizing our county employees who have served for 25 years, we're going to postpone that until the November 25th meeting. We're doing that because we have an impacted agenda today. We had an item added to the afternoon session, and we wanted to give ourselves more time to deal with that issue later this afternoon. So item B2, we're continuing to November 25th. If any of you are here for that, I apologize for that. We just did that again to better accommodate our calendar this afternoon. So with that, we'll move on to presentations, but I need a motion.
So moved as amended.
Okay. Thank you. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Ms. Patterson?
Aye. Thank you. And with that, we're going to take a 5-minute recess while I go back upstairs and get the proclamations that I left in my rush to get down here this morning. So 5 minutes, I'll be right back. Take your seats and we'll continue the meeting. Please take your seats. Possibly.
Over here somewhere.
Okay. Thank you. Again, I apologize for that little interruption there. We have two resolutions to read this morning, one recognizing National Hospice Month and another proclaiming November 16th as National Adoption Day. And I'll ask Supervisor Gibson to read the proclamation for National Hospice Month. Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I have Janet Jeffrey of Hospice Partners? And I was looking for Donna Keene.
I'm back there.
I'm representing her.
Oh, Okay. I'm glad that my memory was such that I did remember sort of what she looked like. Please approach the podium. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas last year, approximately 1,300,000 terminally ill patients and their families relied on end-of-life care provided by the 4,500 volunteer and licensed hospice agencies located in communities throughout the United States. And whereas hospice care allows patients and families the opportunity to receive professional medical services, pain and symptom control, and emotional and spiritual support without hospitalization. And whereas hospice creates a compassionate atmosphere where patients are able to die with dignity wherever they call home, surrounded and supported by loved ones, familiar friends, and committed caregivers. And whereas Hospice Partners of the Central Coast and Hospice of San Luis Obispo County provide hospice care and bereavement counseling, respectively, to over 5,000 individuals each year within the County of San Luis Obispo. And whereas this observance is an opportunity to encourage, honor, and support the professionals, volunteers, and family caregivers who take on the challenge of caring for patients and loved ones at the end of life. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim November 2008 as National Hospice Month and encourages citizens to increase their awareness of the importance and availability of hospice services within San Luis Obispo County. Ladies, if you would come to me.
Would you ladies like to say a few words?
My name is Mary Kunz. I'm with Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, which we also celebrate our birthday 31 years since San Luis Obispo County started as Hospice, Inc. And I'm very happy to say I've been involved with them for 20 years myself. I'm a bereavement counselor, educator, former clinical supervisor, jack of all trades, and public speaker for them. So I just completely love working there. And working at a hospice, people think, isn't that sad? You can't believe how much we laugh. And it just makes room for just living deeply. And so we provide extensive bereavement counseling, no matter how one's loved one died. We see people who have anticipatory grief. Somebody may have a life-threatening illness and still getting treatment and things like that. So we have in-home volunteers, vigil program, crisis support if there's been a death at a school or business. We have volunteers who go in and can meet with people, and we train interns and trainees to be counselors in working with grief. And as is kind of indicated in that, what hospice approach to life, it's not just about how we die, it's about how we live as well. And just conversing with Janet before we came up, both of us are caregivers, are about to be caregivers for in-home. I have my 90-year-old mother living with me right now, who's clearly approaching the end of her life, and I'm just so thankful. I have Hospice Partners Palliative Care for my mom, and they're just wonderful. I have them in my home. And just a little piece from my mom, who is what can be called delightfully demented, and so talking about end-of-life things, and one time she said to me, Mary, do you ever just take it in your hands and roll it around? And I'm going, roll what around, Mom? And she goes, Mary, your life. Your life is a world you hold in your hands, you know. So it's just like, it's like about how you live and being able to be with her. And Hospice Partners helps me do that. So anyhow, we have Hospice San Luis Obispo County. We have two Coping with the Holidays workshops coming up. One I'm doing tomorrow night in Paso Robles, and then next week in San Luis Obispo. So holidays can often be a hard time for people, and make room for our grief. Take good care of yourself and make room for your grief. So. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Could you just take a moment, one of you, and talk about, we have the two organizations. We have Hospice Partners of the Central Coast, and then we have Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. And I know sometimes most people think there's just hospice, and yeah. I know they're different and serve different functions. So could you explain that?
Sure. And like the proclamation said, it said volunteer and licensed hospices. So Hospice of San Luis Obispo County is known as a volunteer hospice. Began as Hospice Inc. 31 years ago. Hospice Partners is a Medicare certified hospice, and they provide full range of medical services at end of life. I'm sure Janet can talk more, but they have nurses, the nurses who come into my home. Hospice of San Luis Obispo County is known as a volunteer hospice. We're not Medicare certified. We don't have nurses or doctors. We don't do medications, but we can provide bereavement counseling and in-home clients for people who might not meet the criteria for a Medicare hospice. So between the two of them, we have a lot of people covered in our community, but I definitely don't confuse them. You want a medical nurse when you need Medicare, when you need medical care.
If I could just say, it was, I know Harry was on the Board of Supervisors. It was 11 years ago this month that the County of San Luis Obispo privatized their home health hospice program, and we became Hospice Partners. And I'm really happy to tell you that we're still strong and growing. I promised you 11 years ago that that was my mission, and I'm privileged to tell you that we fulfilled it. I can't tell you everything we're doing right now because time doesn't allow, but I do want to compare where we are, just a few pieces to 1997. Our staff in 1997 was 35. We have over 100 paid staff now. Our volunteers number 125, and they clock approximately 6,000 hours, volunteer hours, last year. In 1997, we served 400 patients that year. I'm not sure what the total will be this year, but it will be over 1,000 patients. And just as an example, we cared for 196 patients the month of October, just last month. 85% of those patients will die on service. 15%, however, get better with good medical and nursing care, and they graduate. And we watch them on a palliative care program like Mary's mom's on and bring them back into the Medicare hospice.
I want my mom to graduate.
When they need them. Staff will have made an excess of 28,000 home visits, and 3,000 to 5,000 individual family members will receive grief and bereavement services. So we started with one small office in 1997, and now we have three licensed offices, one in Paso Robles, here in San Luis Obispo, and one in Santa Maria, to make us more efficient and effective. Our work is hard, but it's very good. Sophocles said, "I benefit myself by aiding him," and it's with that knowledge that keeps us going. On behalf of everyone at Hospice Partners Central Coast and Hospice of San Luis Obispo, we thank you for acknowledging our work.
Thank you, and don't go away. Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Linthal both have comments.
Oh, I just wanted to thank both organizations for the work they do. I know folks who work in both, and to me it is one of the most extraordinarily human endeavors that we see in this county, and the caring that the folks who participate in all the different programs that both organizations provide just amaze me with their care for their fellow human beings, often in very difficult times. So especially as we head into this season that I know can be difficult for a lot of bereaved families, I thank you for your service and all that you will do in the future.
Thank you. Supervisor Linthal.
Thank you. I'd just like to follow, and I wholeheartedly agree with what Supervisor Gibson said, but it's more than just statistics to say you had 5,000 people in 31 years. I mean, that's a tremendous number. However, when you personally know someone that's gone through the hospice experience, and I can think back that 2 weeks ago, a longtime friend of mine didn't quite make his 90th birthday, but was going through hospice, and the funeral service was this last week, and family members and people that came from out of town, one of the comments that they made was how important hospice was, not only for those that pass away, but for all the family members that are there. It is a team sport, and I don't say that to try to be facetious, but it is, and your collective comforting is something I think is priceless, and so I want to publicly thank you for what you do.
Yes, and I want to echo my colleagues' comments. I've had the experience, I guess you might say, of using hospice services for both family and friends, and I have friends that are involved in the program. Offering counseling and so forth, and so I've seen it from both sides, and it's an incredible organization, and I know that it's nationwide, if not worldwide, and it's a service that's needed at a critical time in people's lives. And I want to thank you, your staff, and volunteers for all you do for the human community. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisors, for your support. It matters. Thank you.
We have another presentation, and Supervisor Asajian will do us the honor of reading a proclamation recognizing November 16th as National Adoption Day, another invaluable human service. Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you know, want to come forward and invite anybody else that would like to join you at this time. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution proclaiming November 16th, which also happened to be my wife's birthday, 2008, as National Adoption Day in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the County of San Luis Obispo recognizes the importance of giving children permanent, safe, and loving families through adoption, and whereas more than 22,000 children in California are waiting for permanent families, and whereas more than 100 children in San Luis Obispo County are waiting for permanent families, and whereas to help these children find permanent nurturing families, the San Luis Obispo County Department of Social Services is acknowledging National Adoption Day, Sunday, November 16, 2008, to raise awareness for the need for adoptive families for local children and join other organizations to celebrate adoption and the families in our community. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with stable and loving families and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child through adoption. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim November 16, 2008, as National Adoption Day in San Luis Obispo County, and in so doing, urge all citizens to join in a national effort to raise awareness about the importance of adoption. Would you please come forward and accept this resolution?
Would you like to say a few words?
I would. Good morning. Tracy Buckingham. I'm your Assistant Director of Social Services for the county. Today, on this day of Choice at the Polls, we're also celebrating the choice of families make to adopt. Some families are created at birth. Others are created when a child's birth family cannot continue to raise their children. In many instances in our child welfare system, children and families choose each other. Today, I'd like to acknowledge and ask those that I refer to stand, our partner agencies, such as Family Care Network, Kinship Center, Family Connections, AspiraNet, CASA, Cuesta College, our county foster adopt homes, and our staff who work very closely, our staff who work very closely with our children, our birth families, our foster adopt families, and last but certainly not least, the families who choose to adopt and those children who have been adopted. I ask that you stand as well. This is the month that we celebrate adoption today with the proclamation and on November 16th with a family fun festival at the Vets Hall. We invite you all to join us. And I want to thank all of those who make a difference in the life of a child. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank all of you for making a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe there was a request to have a picture taken.
Yes.
If they can get everybody to come forward.
Oh, absolutely. We never pass up that opportunity.
Thank you.
Mr. Cash.
Do you sell space there? Yeah, I mean, can I buy the other lapel?
Just calling General.
I want to put an Obama pin over there if I could.
General Assange.
A little bit of an angle to make everybody.
Maybe we can have the shorter one step forward and do two rows.
Okay, single file, no talking. Let's line up.
Shorter ones in front, taller ones in back. Let's do two rows here.
You got to come over this way.
Christy, you might need to move down a little bit to the right.
You can come up here.
I want Christy closer on this side.
Over there, Dana.
Great. Do another one. Back up.
Yeah, that wasn't for you to back up.
Great.
Thank you all so very much.
I'll be there working.
I know.
I'll be working.
Okay, Madam Clerk, I'm getting my life in order here. We have so many requests to speak on items all over the map here, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't leave anyone out. We'll move on to item C1. If you would introduce that item, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Coco Ellsworth of the Planning Commission's denial of his request for a conditional use permit and for vesting tentative tract map for tract 2424 to subdivide an existing 1.69-acre parcel into 23 lots located on the east side of South Halcyon Road at Temple Street, approximately 400 feet south of the Pike, south of the city of Aurora Grande in the 4th District. This item was continued from July 22, 2008. Recommendation is this item be continued to December 16, 2008.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Hogue, from Planning, will you speak to this item, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. This application has been previously considered by your board, and there was direction given for the applicant to redesign it, and it has been redesigned. We're preparing an environmental determination for the revised project, and to allow sufficient time for that to be completed and circulated, we're asking your board to continue this to December 16th.
Okay, thank you. The request is to continue this item to a hearing on December 16th, and I'll open it to the public. I do have one request to speak on this item, Carol Henson. Carol?
Yes, good morning. My name is Carol Henson, and I live just in very close proximity to this Croker Ellsworth property. And I can't hear very well back there, but what I wanted to talk to the board about was I've lived in that area for about 15, 16 years. And basically that area that they're talking about building in is designated for agricultural. And it's also in very close proximity to a creek and a lot of natural habitat and wildlife in that area. And while it is used as agricultural, you know, basically the environment has settled down and had the ability to, they support each other. So it was my understanding that this was being asked to be approved without an environmental impact. And I just wanted to say that I felt that it very much needed an environmental impact because there are farming going on, and there are pesticides used that do blow up the hill and into the neighborhoods, and there is a lot of dust and dirt, and Halcyon Road as well is overburdened with traffic now, and my concern would be the added trucks that would be needing to use the storage units and the added traffic with 14 new single-family homes, etc. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Henson. That was my only request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board and ask Mr. Hoag, you mentioned that an environmental review was underway, is that correct?
Yes, there's an initial study and being prepared for the revised project, and the project has been revised to address the ag buffer issue by putting mini storage, which isn't a type of use that requires the buffer because it's not a place of constant human occupation.
I see.
They've reduced the number of units, and my understanding is that the related county departments reviewing this project, the Ag Commissioner and the Health Department, agree with this approach. And so the initial study will result in a negative declaration being issued, and that will be available for 30 days for people to review before we have the continued hearing.
Very good. So that will be coming out soon then?
Very soon. If you need more information, the project manager is here, Michael Conger, and he can address your questions in more detail if that's necessary.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hoag. My colleagues on the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just to add Mr. Hoag's input, we have close to four meetings now. This is the fourth design that we have received from the applicants. We did hold meetings with the folks at the temple in Halcyon and to get their input, and because of those concerns that this project has been postponed and redesigned so many times in order to meet the concerns that has come to us from the neighborhood and both from the city of Oregon, who also has participated in those meetings to be sure their concerns have met. With that, I move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved in and seconded staff's recommendation to continue this hearing item to December 16th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to item C2.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider a resolution to approve continuing the road improvement fee program and to present the annual circulation study fee report to San Luis Obispo fringe areas. This is in the 3rd District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Very good. Thank you. And the report, Ms. Olmstead, you'll be giving the staff report?
Yes,
Michelle. Mic's not on. Okay. Microphone is yellow light. No, don't even touch that button. There you go.
Right. Thank you. First time. good morning, Chairman and board members. This morning we'll be presenting the Slow Fringe Annual Traffic Updates Report. My name is Dale Ramey. I'm with the Public Works Department, and Michelle Olmstead with Public Works will be giving the presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ramey. Ms. Olmstead.
Good morning.
Is the light on at the base of the mic? There's a, there you go.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Board. I'm Michelle Olmstead with the County Department of Public Works, and I'm here to present the annual 2008 update for the Slow Fringe Circulation Study. The fee area for the Slow Fringe Circulation Study was established in September 2004. At the end of the 2007-2008 fiscal year, there was approximately $136,161 in the San Luis Obispo Fringe Road Improvement Fund. Two single-family mobile home building permits were issued, and there were no fee appeals during the 2007-2008 fiscal year. In 2008, the City of San Luis Obispo annexed a portion of the Slow Fringe fee area, and it's shown in gray on the map. A revised travel demand model, which is currently under development, will be used to adjust the road improvement fees to reflect the annexation. The existing Slow Fringe road improvement fees are $4,587 for residential, retail, or other peak hour trips. No changes are recommended at this time to the existing fee schedule. A revised model will be prepared during the 2008-2009 fiscal year. Projects funded by the Slow Fringe Road Impact Fees include widening of State Route 227 between Tank Farm and Los Ranchos Road, the Buckley Road extension between Batchel and Higuera, signalization of Santa Fe and Tank Farm Road, intersection improvements at Tank Farm Road and State Route 227, and Tank Farm Road widening between State Route 227 and Windmill. Projects included in the circulation study but are not funded by Slow Fringe Road Impact Fees include realigning Santa Fe Road at Tank Farm Road, a two-way left turn lane on Buckley Road from Santa Fe Road to Thread Lane, and also a two-way left turn lane on Vachel Lane between Buckley Road and Higuera Street. Projects within Slo County jurisdiction after city annexation include the Buckley Road extension, design and environmental are underway for a 1,600-foot roadway extension. Construction of the project is pending receipt of additional road improvement funds. The Buckley Road two-way left turn lane from Santa Fe to Thread Lane, this project is not funded by road impact fees and funding could come from Proposition 1B monies. The final project, Tank Farm Road widening between Windmill and Santa Fe, project will widen the roadway to 5 lanes. Currently, no funding is available, and there's potential for the improvements to be completed by development. The next steps are in the 2008-2009 fiscal year, county staff will work with city staff to develop a new San Luis Obispo Fringe travel demand model. The road impact fees will be adjusted to reflect city annexation, updated traffic projections, and current construction costs. County staff will continue to work with city staff on a reciprocal agreement which will supplement Slow Fringe account monies with Slow City traffic impact fees. Recommendations are for your board to receive the annual circulation study fee report and adopt a resolution continuing the need for the road improvement program. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Michelle. Are there any questions from the board at this point? Supervisor Gibson?
Unless Mr. Lenthal had a question. I mean, just looking at the table here, you've lined out $30 million of improvements, of which 9 might be expected to come from the road impact fee program, and there's $136,000 in the bank right now. So when you say you're going to come up with a new model, are you sort of projecting how that, you know, where's the cash going to come to take on a number of very ambitious items here?
The new model would evaluate the need for any additional impacts that might be forecasted, but it would also just help to divide the trips between the city of San Luis Obispo and the county so that the portions of the project funds.
Okay. So is there a mechanism by which development inside the city now can contribute to improvements outside the city limits as part of that road system?
That would be part of the reciprocal agreement.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I'll open it to the public at this point, though I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
Mr. Chair, approve staff's recommendation and adopt the resolution.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve staff's recommendation. Roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Thank you. Okay, we'll move along to item C3. Mr. Hogue is back, and Mr. Waller from planning. Would you introduce the item, Madam Clerk?
Yes, the next item on your agenda is item C3. This is a hearing to consider resolutions regarding 6 proposals to establish new ag preserves and amend existing ag preserves, and I think I'll let Mr. Waller introduce them individually for your separate action.
And Mr. Chair, before Terry gets started, I'll just mention that this is the second of 3 groups of ag preserves that are coming to your board for action. and this group represents a total of 306 acres of land being added to the program and would represent a net annual reduction in property tax revenue of about $37,000. And that is what the agriculturalists will save by participating in the program. Mr. Waller has some updates on a couple of the items, and I'll let him introduce them.
Okay, and I assume that will include item F, which...
Yes.
Okay, very good.
I'll let Terry explain that.
Thank you. Mr. Waller?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Terry Waller, planning staff. I'd like to do those updates and corrections as we go, if that's okay.
That's fine.
I think it's just clearer and a little smoother that way. Would you like me to read the entire item?
Actually, it's been introduced, so I think the best course of action would be to take tentative motions on each, and then we can collectively...
Each one separate?
Yes, okay, we'll do each one separately then. So if you'll handle it that way, Mr. Waller.
Patterson, what he's asking for is if we can read by file number and name instead of reading the whole description.
Right, and then give us
a discussion. Save you time, and I think that would satisfy the notification.
So you'd just like me to do the application, name and number?
Yeah, and then summarize what it does,
okay.
If you would.
The first item before you is file number AGP 2007-00020. This is a proposal by Armstrong Vineyards to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve. And this is based on a lot line adjustment. I'll put the slide up here. This will cooperate with me. There we go. This is a somewhat of a complicated lot line adjustment. It involves the next property that you'll be seeing. The alteration of the agricultural preserve boundaries in the new contract is necessary because two of the three parcels involved in the lot line adjustment are under separate conservation contracts and different preserves, and the area to be added is not in either of the agricultural preserves, so we'll actually be taking a new area on one of the third parcel and adding that to one of the preserves in the process of this exchange. The small exchange of land areas will have negligible effect on the overall agricultural productivity since the vineyard is located elsewhere on the overall Armstrong Vineyard property. You may have noted in the staff report that this is a much larger property with multiple preserves and contracts and extensive vineyards, so this alteration is really rather minor in the grand scheme of things here. The alteration of the Ag Preserve boundaries is consistent with the Williamson Act because the resulting property will consist of at least 90% of the land under former contract, and it will result in no net loss of land under the contract, and the land area exchange is generally of like quality or acreage, and those are the requirements for doing lot line adjustments in the Williamson Act. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 320 acres in a term of 20 years, and I'd like to note this correction at this time. The second page of the resolution, this is on page C3, 13, paragraph 1D. Council corrected pages, so there's a page 2 that's been corrected and is now with the clerk of the board. I passed that out to her previously.
Okay, so the clerk.
So basically, this is just a correction in the term on the resolution. Nothing else, staff report exhibits needed to be changed. It's just a minor error.
Exactly what it is.
Okay. And
what is change?
What is the correction?
Change it from 10 years. It currently reads 10 years in the packet that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it would read 20 years. The new corrected resolution reads 20 years.
I'm sorry, I need to correct Terry just a little bit. What's the words in the resolution are the remaining term of contract. That needs to be stricken and replaced with 20 years.
Okay.
In effect, the remaining term of contract is 10 years, but the clerk advised me that we need to be precise in our introduction of oral changes to the resolution.
Very good. Correction so noted. That concludes your report on this item, Mr. Waller?
Yes, it does. Thank
you. Okay, with that, I'll open it to the public for comment. I have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve this. Item A, roll call, Madam Clerk.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Mr. Elvick?
Aye.
Mr. Shashi?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Gibson?
Yes.
Patterson?
Aye. Okay. Item B, Mr. Wallach.
The next item is file number AGP 2007-00021. It's a proposal by Thomas Madden to alter the boundaries of an agricultural reserve to add 5.38 acres and rescind and simultaneously enter into new contract. That will come later in the year, the contract itself. This is simply an alteration of the agricultural preserve. The resulting parcel size on the preserve will be 105.45 acres. The project site is located in the agricultural land use category on the northern and southern side of Kyler Canyon Road, and this is west of and abutting 3252 Kyler Canyon Road, approximately 5 miles west of the city of Paso Robles. It's in the Adelaida planning area. The existing property subject to contract includes approximately 105.45 acres of land used for dry farm and walnut orchards. The proposal, again, will have negligible effect on the agricultural productivity due to the small size. The alteration of the Ag Reserve boundary is also consistent with the Williamson Act, as is in the previous case, for the same reasons. The minimum parcel size on the contract should remain at 320 acres. That's what the current preserve and contract minimum is. And this is based on the combination of grazing land, oak woodland, and dry farm walnut orchard. The Planning Commission and the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee recommend approval. And again, the term of the contract is for 20 years, and we should do the same change that we did to the previous one. I'm so sorry. But that's the second page of the resolution on page C3, 23, paragraph 2D, and this has been corrected to reflect a 20-year term again. Got it. Okay. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. I'll open it to the public for comment on this item. I have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff recommendation is amended.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation on item B as amended. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mr. Shashian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye. Okay. Item C, Mr. Waller.
The next application is file number AGP 2007-00024. It's a proposal by John and Terry Walter to establish an agricultural preserve to allow the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract later in the year. And this subject property consists of approximately 82 acres and is located within the agricultural land use category on the northern side of Australia Road, approximately 2,500 feet east of the intersection of River Road and Australia Road, and 650 feet southeast of the community of San Miguel. So it's very close to San Miguel. The site is in the Salinas River planning area. The rules of procedure provide that a property must first be under an agricultural preserve in order to later qualify for a land conservation contract. The applicant's 82 acres exceeds the gross acreage requirement to meet the eligibility for an agricultural preserve. The prime land preserve must also have 40 acres of class 1 or 2 irrigated land under production, other irrigated lands that have suitable soils and crops, or irrigated vineyard or in less quality soils. In this case, the property qualifies for a prime land preserve with 47 acres in irrigated vineyard on class 2 soils. The property qualifies for the preserve. We've covered that. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 80 acres and a minimal initial term of 10 years. The 10-year term is based on the property being within 1 mile of San Miguel's urban reserve line. That concludes my presentation for that item.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I'll open it. Well, any questions from staff? I see none, so I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve item C. Madam Clerk?
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Okay. Item D, Mr. Waller.
The next application is file number AGP 2007-00025. This is a proposal by Jack Messina to establish an agricultural preserve to allow the applicant to later enter into a land conservation contract. The subject property consists of approximately 89 acres located within the agricultural land use category on the northern side of Vineyard Drive. This is approximately 3 miles northwest of Highway 46 west and approximately 4.2 miles northwest of the community of Templeton. The site is in the Adelaida planning area. Again, the rules of procedure first require that a property be in an agricultural preserve. The applicant's 89 acres of gross acreage exceeds the minimum gross acreage requirement. The prime land preserve requirement must also have 40 acres. In this case, the property meets the requirement with 68 acres of irrigated vineyard on Class 3 and Class 4 soils. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 80 acres and a minimum initial term of 20 years. Concludes my presentation.
Very good, thank you. Seeing no questions, I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for action.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve item D. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Item E? Mr. Waller?
Item E is file number AGP 2007-00027. It's a proposal by Michael Jackson to establish an agriculture preserve. This will allow him to later enter into a land conservation contract. The property consists of approximately 128.5 acres and is located within the agriculture land use category. The site's on the western side of Memphis Creek Road, approximately 2,000 feet north of the intersection of Highway 1 and Cayucas Creek, and approximately 2,000 feet northeast of the community of Cayucas. The site is in the Estero planning area. The site has two principal agricultural uses, approximately 39.7 acres of irrigated avocados and 79.8 acres of grazing land. The applicant is proposing establishment of the agricultural preserve based on the avocados. In this case, the property meets the intent of the prime land preserve provision with 45.7 acres of avocados on Class 2 or better soils, and the remainder of which is on Class 6 soils. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. This is Cayucas Agricultural Preserve number 45 with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres and an initial term of 10 years. Concludes my presentation.
Very good, thank you. Questions? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public, but have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, and Supervisor Gibson, I believe this is in your domain. And well, is this the Michael Jackson?
It is the Michael Jackson. Not the singer recently.
Not the other Michael Jackson.
But it is this. Never mind, sir. It's
a Michael Jackson longer than the other Michael Jackson.
It's a philosophic point, but it is Michael Jackson, and I do move staff's recommendation.
Second?
Right.
We got a second.
Yeah. Okay. Dies for lack of a second. That's a sad, sad deal.
Doesn't
on an egg preserve.
Okay. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Patterson.
Aye. Okay, and we do have an item F that I think you want to make an announcement about.
Yeah. Item F is a little unusual in that it's a property that is in non-renewal. The previous owner had elected to remove the property from the Wayne Snack program, and as you all know, it's a voluntary program. And he subsequently sold the property, and the new owner approached the county and was very eager to remain in the Williamson Act. And so we processed an application that will effectively rescind the old contract and create a new contract with a 20-year term. So he'll be in the program for a while. But I guess based on the fact that this is a little out of the ordinary, initially I believed that it needed to go to the board for action on the preserve, but on further reflection, we determined that there is no action necessary by your board because The agriculture preserve does not need to be amended or altered in any way. It's fine the way it is. We just need to follow up with the contract.
So very good, and that'll be coming back to us in the next round, I presume?
When the contracts come to you on consent.
Okay, very good. So that concludes this item. I just want to say that these actions we just took added approximately 300 acres to our Ag Preserve program in San Luis Obispo County. So with that, we're going to take a short break. Before we hear item C5, we're reversing the order on C4 and C5. We'll be coming back at 10:45 to hear item C5, followed by item C4.
Item on your agenda is item C5. This is a hearing to consider ordinances amending Title 22, the Land Use Ordinance, and Title 23, the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, relating to the conversion or closure of mobile home parks. This affects all districts. This item was continued from September 9, 2008. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. Ted Bench has been the project planner on this for quite a long time, and I did want to commend him for a lot of hard work put into this in the last few weeks to get this ready for your agenda. He will be making the presentation today, and with him is Dana Lilly, his direct supervisor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bench.
Thank you, and good morning to the Board of Supervisors. I'm Ted Bench with County Planning, and I have the overhead PowerPoint on the overhead. Again, the reason that the county is considering this ordinance is because our housing element has a program which encourages the county to consider an ordinance that will help preserve mobile home parks and help displace residents if a park closes. The board adopted a temporary moratorium that's good until February 2009 to give us time to consider this ordinance. And the Planning Commission's considered the ordinance you're about to see and has recommended its approval. And again, today's hearing, the board can act on this ordinance. This would amend Titles 22 and 23 to have a mobile home park conversion or closure ordinance. What would be required if a mobile home park were closed? There will be a separate hearing on a different ordinance, which is the Mobile Home Park Subdivision Ordinance, Title 21. Now, from the September 9th hearing, the board had five questions that they asked staff to look at, and those questions were, should we have stronger language about relocation counselors? Who should handle hardship exception requests? What about the moratorium? Should it be allowed to expire in February? Additional help for residents and the special findings. So with the relocation counselors, staff should verify that the relocation counselors are qualified individuals, and the board can add language to the ordinance that strengthens that requirement. You'll find that language on page 2 of the staff report. We actually have a local expert. People's Self-Help Housing Corporation is recognized by the Los Angeles office of HUD as a qualified relocation consultant. But after the staff report was written, I looked online and found there's other sources of help for people that are need relocation assistance. There's a group called Move Seniors, which has a three-day certification program. And there's another group called National Association of Senior Move Managers, which verifies that all of its members are both insured and experienced. So the added language in the ordinance would require staff to look closer at the qualifications of relocation counselors. The hardship exception request, The ordinance right now is set up so that if a park owner wants to close his park and he feels that the relocation requirements in the ordinance are too strong or that he can't meet them all, he can ask for a modification of the requirements or a partial waiver. That request from the park owner would come to the planning department. The planning department has staff that has the capability to review such requests. Then that request, which staff's recommendations would be provided or presented to the planning commission along with the application to close the mobile home park. But the board wanted to know if there were other groups or agencies out there that could also review the hardship waiver request, particularly the Mobile Home Park Rent Review Board. And staff contacted the Mobile Home Park Rent Review Board members. They appreciate the board's interest here, but they would prefer not to take on this added responsibility. These are two different ordinances. The Rent Review Board looks at requests to raise space rent in mobile home parks, but this ordinance would be looking at requests to say if a park were to close, how much should the park owner be required to pay to help the displaced residents. It's a completely different set of ordinances here. And again, though, the board, there is language in the staff report that the board may consider and incorporate into today's ordinance that would require the Rent Review Board to have the responsibility of looking at hardship request. The moratorium. The moratorium, again, is effective until February 2009. And actually, the way state law is set up, your board could terminate the moratorium with your approval of this ordinance, or you could allow the moratorium to continue until February to give the board more time to look at, say, the bonafide or mobile home park subdivision ordinance that's also being proposed. The moratorium was originally set up to allow the county time to prepare and consider ordinances that would deal with mobile home park closures. But along the way, we also began to address the issue of mobile home park subdivisions. So the moratorium technically could be closed could be closed as soon as you take action on the closure conversion ordinance. But again, your board can continue it until February if you feel there's more time needed. If you want
Mr. Bench, just while we're on that subject, and this may be an issue for you ordering out your Mr. McNulty, he had the phone in his hand. My question.
He's talking to the clerk.
We're starting early, you realize. You think it's punchy now, waiting until later this afternoon.
It'll be a long day.
Mr. Bench, back to the question. Yes. You talked about adopting the ordinance, and then we'd no longer have the need for the moratorium to be in place, but the ordinance doesn't take effect for 30 days after adoption, is that correct? So we wouldn't want them to necessarily begin and end, you know, upon adoption, or we'd have 30 days of exposure, I guess. Is that correct, Mr. McNulty?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. The other thing, as Mr. Bench pointed out, the moratorium at this point is providing relief, I believe, from conditions which would exist until we adopt or until the board considers the conversion, the subdivision conversion ordinance, which is the next item that you're going to consider on your agenda. So my recommendation would be that you allow the moratorium to remain in place at least until that ordinance becomes effective if your board decides to adopt it.
Okay, becomes effective is the key there.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. McNulty. Sorry for the interruption, Mr. Bench.
Chair.
Oh, Hold it. Supervisor Sajian wants
while
to...
While we start wait. Interrupting, if I may ask a question to both gentlemen, how would the present court cases impact what we're trying to do here today?
Unfortunately, court cases have been filed regarding the next item that the board will consider, which is the subdivision ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
And again, if the board wants to continue the moratorium to February, then you should strike out Section 2 of the ordinance that you have in front of you. And thanks for that clarification on the 30 days for ordinance to become effective. The board also discussed the whether additional help should be provided for displaced residents. On the February or September 9th hearing, there was discussion about whether the county should require other parks to accept displaced units if a mobile home park closes, or if a resident is moved to another park, or perhaps even to a apartment because there's no space open that they can move to in another mobile home park, if that displaced resident should get lifetime rent subsidy. And these handling this issue for what is a very serious issue, how much aid should be given to displaced residents. Staff simply want to say that the Planning Commission did recommend approval of the ordinance that you have in front of you, and that's because they did consider many options and felt that this was a balanced approach. The ordinance that you have in front of you is based on a state law, a review of what other jurisdictions have, and there's, again, the Commission dealt with this quite a lot, and you have to strike a balance between what is fair for the residents and what's fair for the park owner as well. So staff would recommend that that the ordinance is adequate and that it gives a balanced solution to addressing the needs of displaced residents. The board discussed special findings as well, and findings were added to the ordinance by the Planning Commission. The Golden State Mobile Home Owners League suggested that findings be put in the ordinance, and the Planning Commission agreed, and that's what you have in the ordinance today. But your board looked at that language and suggested that there might be a need for adding wording to clarify the findings. And in the staff report, there was a discussion about say what other jurisdictions have, and Ventura County has a special finding that is a little more specific because it addresses the need of the neighborhood as well as the community. When you're talking about closing a mobile home park, is there going to be a significant impact on the affordable housing stock in the neighborhood as well as countywide? It's a staff suggesting really is that the finding that came from the Planning Commission is adequate, and your board can consider additional wording. Staff can make a detailed finding if you like, but the problem that we come into is the more detailed you get, the more it's harder it is to get consensus about what you should use as a measuring tool, or what is what geographical area you might want to consider if a mobile home park is closing. So again, staff recommends that the finding that's in the ordinance now be left as it is. So to summarize the discussion the board had and the direction you gave to staff, you wanted staff to address relocation counselors, and there's added language that your board can consider that would strengthen the staff review of relocation counselors. Hardship exceptions, who should be doing the evaluation, there's language in the staff report that your board can adopt if you like that would require the Rent Review Board to handle hardship exception requests. The moratorium, we had a brief discussion on that. Your board has the option to continue it until February. The additional help for residents beyond what the ordinance has in place now, your board can discuss that as well. And findings, your board can either leave the findings as they are, or you can discuss adding additional language to the finding. Staff's recommendation is that the board receive public testimony and that you adopt the mobile home park closure conversion ordinance.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bench. This is an opportunity for my colleagues to ask questions of staff, if there are any, prior to public comment. Any questions? Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you. Mr. Bench, the process you're recommending for either closure of parks to come through the planning department as a request, and it will part of the process to go to the planning commission, and from there any party can appeal it to the board of supervisors?
That's correct.
Okay. And could I follow on that just in terms of specifics? One of them was there's a question about the qualifications of a relocation counselor, and also the acceptance or rejection of a hardship application. And those two would be under the preliminary analysis by staff, but the actual decision on either of those two is up to the decision-making review authority, the planning commission or the board.
Yes, thank you. And that is correct. The ordinance, added language is before your board if you want to use it, but the ordinance as it stands right now would have staff reviewing the relocation counselor and all other experts involved, and also the hardship, any hardship exception request, making a recommendation on those to the planning commission, which ultimately could be appealed to the board.
Okay, and as I understand it, if I may, Mr. Lilly and Mr. Bench, staff, including yourself, have special training and expertise in that kind of review. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, Dana Lilly with your planning staff. More specifically, three of our staff, including Ted and myself, are certified by the National Development Council. It's a pretty intensive 3-week certification series. So we're certified to be public sector lenders, and as such, we have to be able to evaluate a business or a development and understand the financing.
Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Sajkin.
Thank you. Concern I shared last time about the rent subsidy. I know that there are different folks, different ages, different working capabilities that reside in within mobile home. In any given park, it sounds reasonable, but I don't think it is, in a sense that if you're at a certain age with some kind of a disability or just on a flat income, if it's federal or state Social Security, whatever it might be, we're going to take this person, relocate them against their will. And according to state law and what we're recommending, a couple years down the road, that rent can go up to whatever the new is. And I don't know if we're going to apply a formula that it can only go up so much, because if they're on flat income and we don't know what the rent's going to be, might as well add them to the homeless list. I don't see a solution there. I mean, how are we going to take care of them?
I would like to look at that section of the ordinance again. The board has the ability to extend the time period in which rent subsidy can be provided. I believe it was the ordinance says it will be 1 year for low-income households. Your board could make it 2 years. But I have to say that if it, when you suggest a lifetime rent subsidy, I'm not aware of any jurisdiction that does that.
Can we legally, or are there any laws that will help us, provide us to say it may not go up more than a percentage after 2 years?
Dana Lilly, your planning staff, legal counsel may want to chime in, but the bigger picture is the ordinance the Planning Commission is recommending to you, the Planning Commission and staff feel, is a balanced solution, recognizing the costs both to the residents and the park owners. We also have to remember we have a mobile home park rent control ordinance, and if you combine a new ordinance that encourages park owners to stay in the business of mobile home park and a limit on how much they can collect from rent from spaces, they're both squeezing the property owner to some degree. If we go too far with the county's new ordinance, it will beg the question, have we gone too far?
So if you're relocating, are they under the rent control? The same formula applies as if you were there for number of years rather than as a newcomer, you will pay the new rent that might not be impacted with the rent control as it applies to any given park?
So is the supervisor speaking to if someone's relocated from a mobile home park to other housing?
Right, to another mobile home park, let's say.
Well,
that does have a rent
up.
Control. Would then they be under the existing rent control that applies to everybody in that park, or are they going to now be considered a newcomer and there is no rent control at that same level? That's a real problem that I'm having here.
Okay, if they relocate to another mobile home park,
right,
that's under the county's mobile home park rent control ordinance, then I believe that rent that was on that space can go up by 10%, right. And then they are rent regulated.
So we're going to put this in black and white, and the same going to be applied as the rest of them who've been there for many years before.
That's correct. When a new person moves into a mobile home park, the space rent goes up by 10%, but the formula stays the same.
Okay. Mr. McNulty, you wanted to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tim McNulty. I would just add, Supervisor Shadjian, that the presumptions that behind the answers that you just received are that the tenant has moved into a rent-controlled park and that they're moved into a part of the park that's subject to rent control. We do have at least one park here in the county where sort of half the park, I believe, is covered by rent control and half isn't because of a state statute that said new spaces created after a certain point in time can't be subject to rent control. So the answers that you got were if the person is a renter in a current mobile home park and moves to another rent-controlled mobile home park, then yes, it would be a 10% limitation on the rent, and that would be a 10% increase over what the tenant who preceded them at the new park was paying, not what they were paying at their old park.
So if by no choice you're moved into this new park that doesn't have the same rent control as the old one, and you are within your